We're in Exodus chapter 16. And obviously we're not going to cover Exodus 16 in its full rendition. But Exodus 16 is a, you know, it's an amazing thing. Here's the children of God led out. And it says, then they set out from Elim, and all the congregation of the sons of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after their departure from the land of Egypt. So, 6 weeks out, it looks like, they're from there, right? It's already gone a little bit western.
Is this before they got to the wilderness of Sin?
No, they're heading there.
Okay.
So, and they're coming to there, wherever that is. It seemed like they went down the coast and potentially cut inland, but it's a little hard to know exactly where the deal is. We'll hurry, Richard. You'll be okay. What do you got a coat on for? Are you heading over to?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So here they went through. The thing that we always have to remember here, and the thing that seems so pertinent to our lives, I would contend that it's what the girls are. It's a big part of, it is what the girls are dealing with this weekend and talking about. Hopefully it'll be a pretty transformative thing. My wife spent the last month preparing for this weekend and she cried a lot. So just, the stories of women, who, Corrie Ten Boom, Elizabeth Elliot, Leach, a couple of them, there's a couple others that you probably don't know the names of that are unbelievable. And why did God let them go through that?
Yeah.
You know, why did, was God not there? Was God a loving father then? Or did he just skip them in the process? And the issue becomes, and it's this way with the children of Israel, and it's this way in our lives, that if God loves us, he will let the hard things of this world raise us, sanctify us, bring us to the point of maturity in our lives because he cares enough about us that he's willing to do that. The people of Israel were going over to the promised land, right? We have to put this in perspective. Where we really lose perspective on the deal is, what, you need your coffee or something? Yeah. Nice. So the
for the kids.
For the kids, yeah. Yeah. So the thing that we need to consider is God is never not in control. God always has a plan and a purpose. Not consider what we have to live by. And that when there's hard times, when things are hard, when things don't seem to be going in a way that we think they should or that we like or that are easy, that God is in control and God is still moving to bring us closer to him and in a relationship with him. We lose perspective in this world. In the Old Testament, the promised land was where God was leading him. What's our promised land? Is it this earth? It's not. And we need to be really careful. I mean, David said, thank goodness that I can see the goodness. I'm so thankful I can see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. And all of us can say that. I'm glad that we can see the goodness. He's a loving father. In a relationship with him on the walk will be the best and happiest, most content and secure place we can be. But this is not a promised land on this earth. And we lose sight of that. We lose sight of that. We want to make this our promised land. We want to make this a land flowing with milk and honey in our lives. But God is preparing us for eternity. And that, in the process, you know, they ate manna for 40 years in the wilderness. Okay? Was that just because God was neglectful and wasn't a very good dad? Or was he in process of preparing them to enter the promised land? And it's the same thing with us. And this life is about preparing us for eternity. And for eternal walk with God. And I, you know, most of us think, well, I can just kind of slack in this life and do what I want to do and enjoy myself. And then when I get to heaven, it'll all be good. And then I can do the heaven thing for eternity, right? And I have to admit that, I did not ever grow up with a high view of heaven. You know, it was always where we were going to spend eternity, we weren't going to go to hell. Now, this is a good thing. I like that part, you know. I'm not going to burn in hell and separate, but, you know, I'm going to be singing and riding my tricycle on gold streets or something. I mean, this does not seem like a good idea, you know. And, I wrong? Absolutely wrong. You know, and the more that I walk with God in my life, the more excited I get about doing that unbroken forever. And I think that's really what it takes. It's not about, you know, I would like to fantasize about hunting some kind of a giant unicorn muskox on some planet somewhere in another place or something. But you know, all I know is it will be better than I can imagine in a relationship with him that I can imagine. And this is preparing us for eternity. And again, I think we lose a little bit of perspective. I think we sometimes have the same mentality that most boys, teenage boys have these days, and that I don't need to grow up, right? Because that's going to happen soon enough. You know, I just need to go to college and screw around, and I don't need to be responsible with my sex life, and I don't need to be responsible with, I don't need to turn into a man and act like a man. And so we have a lot of 40-year-old little boys. Certainly a lot of 30-year-old boys, and there's not too many 20-year-olds that aren't boys. Right? Correct? I mean, look around the world. I mean, there's not too many 30-year-olds that are acting as men should act, much less 17-year-olds, because they should be. But we have a perception that you don't need to grow up in this culture. You don't need to be responsible, you know. One of the driving forces that God puts in our life is sexuality. And I'm convinced that one of the reasons that God allows that driving force to begin at whatever age, 10, 12 years old, and a little boy, okay? That would seem to be a curse, right? That isn't fair at all. Why does this poor kid have this when he can't get married right now? I'm confident that a big part of that is so that he will want to grow up. Because if he is trained right and understands things right and lives in the truth and has God's perspective, little boys don't get to have sex. Okay? Men get to have sex. Okay? When you, as a boy, you don't get to have sex. You have to move out of your father's house. It doesn't mean move to another country, move away. It probably means a tent next door. Be responsible. Be out from under your father, so, you know, mom and dad. You know, you're not mommy's little boy anymore. You have to move out, be responsible, have a means, taking care of a wife, and be willing to lay your life down and be a hero for her and your kids. You have to be a man. Okay? So you have to prepare the 12-year-old till whenever, 16, 18, 20. I mean, that sounds outrageous in our culture. You know, I'm of the opinion that we'd be much better off not waiting until you're 30. Because all you do is create a tremendous amount of selfish baggage in personal lifestyle that you're doing. But again, then you look at most 20-year-olds and go, they need to grow up first, you know? So, but it's a matter of the same thing in our life is that we're not supposed to not grow up and be mature. The Bible time and time again talks about God leading us to maturity, right? In this life, leading us to maturity in our relationship with Him. So, we look at this story of him leading them out of Egypt and leading them on this journey. Time and time again, they run out of food. I mean, they already did, right? They come against it, and then they just ran out of water, right? Last week we talked about they ran. All of a sudden, they're 3 days without water. They don't got big storage. So they're carrying on their backs and their animals, and all of a sudden, and don't forget, it's not just them carrying water. They've got animals. How do you carry enough water for animals for 3 days? I mean, some of them might have been camels, but, you know, most of them were probably not cows and donkeys and oxen and sheep and goats and stuff. They needed water on doing it. So God Could have done it a different way. This is what we need to remember. Could have done it a different way. They could have found water all along the way. But instead he waited until they were 3 days and they were really thirsty, and what did they do? Started grumbling. Right? Started grumbling. And God is very patient, as he is with us. Okay? Grumbling is not okay. It's a word that's used here. The word is actually means murmuring. What does murmuring mean? You know? Murmuring means complaining kind of under your breath. I'm sure none of us have ever done that. Like, dang it, man, I wish it wasn't the stupid thing. Yeah, we're doing it. Blah, blah. You know, it's one thing to be brazen and bold about it and go, why is this happening? Right? It's another thing to murmur, which is almost worse. Right? Because it's not like you're going to get a response or do something. It's a condition of a heart that is certainly discontent and is untrusting of God. So, here's 6 weeks into this thing. They've already run out of water, murmured. What did God do? Came to this bitter water, which, again, of all the things, it would have been better not to have water, right? But all of a sudden, here's all this water, and it's bitter. Now you really, what's the matter with you, God? Throws a tree, tells Moses to throw a tree in it, and it's clean, and they all drink it, and they're good. And they keep on moving. And now they're at a point again of, and the whole congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. Verse 2 of chapter 16. And the sons of Israel said to them, would that we had died by the Lord's hand in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, when we ate bread to the fill, for you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. You know, obviously, they didn't trust God yet, right? Obviously, they didn't. They were in a process of. It to me, it's somewhat like a adopted child. Okay, that you might say in some ways, it is an adopted child. But God adopted them. God had already called them, but God took them in when they had been raised wrong, when they had been raised and trained wrong. So God is in the process of reorienting this training. Who does an adopted child trust? Nobody but themselves, probably. Right? They trust themselves. You know, one of the key things as a father and a mother, one of the key things that we need to always consider is our children should never learn to be little survivors. Okay? Now, that doesn't mean they shouldn't learn to start a fire and get their clothes on and clean their room and do the things they should do. That's not the issue. The issue is they should trust their mom and their dad absolutely for food, for shelter, for clothing, for security, for safety. Those shouldn't be things they worry about. Those shouldn't be things that are even in their mind. Because when you aren't at for emotional well-being, because when those things aren't given by the primary caregivers, the place that God has put a mom and a dad to be, a kid learns to get them for themselves. And you can say a little kid that's getting food and getting shelter and living on the street, that's one thing. But even within a classic American middle-class home, we teach children to be survivors. Emotionally, how do I self-protect against siblings or other people? I mean, there's any time a kid goes, well, I can't trust dad or can't trust mom to do this. I'm not sure if they're going to. And even if it's in a spoiled level, you know, I can't trust that they'll give me what I want to do, so I'm going to go get it. So I'm going to lie, or I'm going to cheat, or I'm going to steal, or I'm going to do whatever I need to do to get done, take care of the needs that I need to take care of. An idyllic, best-case scenario, mom and dad, a kid never worries about those things. A kid trusts his mom and his dad to provide for him. So here's these people in Israel that have become pretty, they've been victimized as slaves for a long time. Right? You know, this is what's happened. They become victims. Victims are always little survivors. And they are going to, they know how to take care of themselves, they think. Here they are looking back on pots of meat and stuff. I mean, the only reason they were fed anything by the Egyptians was so they could remain hardworking slaves. Right? I mean, it wasn't like they were celebrating in Egypt with a good life. They were given food so that they could have enough strength to go do the work that the Egyptians wanted them to do. It was a wretched place of bondage. Okay? I mean, they just come out of, but they hadn't ever learned to trust God. Right? Correct response coming up. And here they are, and they're grumbling because they don't have food, right? Correct word response to go, you know, and all of us would be to smile and go, God, what do you got figured this time? You know, you're my dad. You're the one that provides for me. You're the one that takes care of me. But is that what we do? Is that how we act? And again, we're out of time already. So there's a couple of things that I just, because we will deal with this next week, talk about it. But there's a couple of quotes. One quote is from Charles Spurgeon. I think it's a very important thing for us to consider. When we can't see his hands, we can trust his heart. It's a very important, we want to see in front of our face, God, you're not doing this. God, where are you? And these people had not learned to trust God's heart yet. Okay? Because they didn't see his hand, right? His hand would have put food in front of him. His hand would have made sure there's food. And obviously, we go on, this is where the whole manna deal starts, right? This is where God gives them their sustenance for the next 40 years is when it begins, right here at this time. In this process of God taking this red-headed little stepchild, I don't know where we get that idea, because, you know, something about the red-headed stepchild, you know, something is, but maybe, I don't know, full of life, ornery, untrusting of anyone and everyone. So, but God is taking them and showing them, okay, I'm going to let you get to the point where you're going to have to make a choice here and realize that I will take care of you. And I want us to understand and think about the fact that whenever we come up against adversity, how do we respond? Whenever we come up against when things don't seem to be the way we do, we respond in faith, you know, or do we respond in fear that I'm not in control? And that's a really, if we respond in fear that I'm not in control, we won't grow. We're not going to grow. If we respond in, okay, God, this is an opportunity for you to show yourself to be dad. This is a time for dad here. But instead, we immediately start scheming, conniving, manipulating, trying to control things, get back in control. And, actually, it's not a man and a woman thing. It's a human condition by every chance. I would say in some ways, women struggle with it maybe even more, mainly because of failure of men in their lives. They don't trust men in their lives. They haven't had trustworthy men in their lives. And women are strong, stinking survivors. I mean, I'll tell you what, I don't know a stronger survivor than my wife, you know. I mean, to a fault, right? I mean, I could tell you stories about her, probably saving my life, you know, out in the middle of nowhere and dying of hypothermia, and we're still 10 miles in and butt deep snow and the mountains hunting deer, you know, and I was going to sit down by a tree and die probably. I mean, I was done. I've been dragging deer and got it down to place. I was soaking wet and went down below zero and the snow was this deep and we're walking in cut slash with snow that deep, and I was done. And she, get up right now, we're going, you know. Okay. Good thing, I'd probably be sitting next to that tree, you know, still doing it. She's BA when it comes to survivor. And I would contend that women are that way. You know, if you had to describe the state of our country, you could say, well, if you're not going to do it, then I will. Right? I mean, if you're not going to do it, I'll get it done. And women are about getting it done. Okay? More so than guys. Guys are a little more irresponsible by nature, a little more reckless, a little more adventurous, maybe. Guys are about, well, no food? Cool, man. Let's see what happens, you know? You know? You know, this is, things are a little sideways here. Okay. You know, this, see what happens here. I'm not saying trusting. I'm saying stupid and irresponsible. But women are not that way. I've never found women to want to be in that state, to want to be in that state where they're not in control, you know, where they don't have things dialed in, where they don't know what's going to happen next, where things are going to go. You know, my wife and I struggle with this all the time. She's by nature not an adventurous girl, you know, and I just want to go on an adventure, you know. Where are we going to go? I don't know. I don't want to know, you know. I'm going to try to get lost. Never been able to do it yet, but I'm going to try to get lost to her. That's, are you kidding me? What are you doing, you know? I'm going on an adventure, you know? Let's go. Girls want to be, no, I want to know what the steps are. I want to know how we're going to get out of here. I know what we're going to do if this happens, what we're going to do if that happens. What are we going to do here? On it. The problem is that how do we respond when we are not in control? And God, the story of them walking through Egypt is God saying, how you respond is by trusting me. And he wanted to teach them that prior to them entering the promised land. Because what would happen if he took them directly to the promised land? You'll have to excuse me, they would have been spoiled rotten brats. It was a land flowing with milk and honey. It was a land where the houses were already built, where the fields were already planted, where it was settled land with that was rich and full. And all of a sudden they go, oh yeah, I guess I deserve this, right? I mean, kind of like a Seattle tech money mentality, you know? I mean, you were the secretary in the company, and you just happened to take a stock option, you know, when you're doing it, and 20 years later, you're a millionaire, and all of a sudden you think you're something special, you know? Look what I did. I'm a millionaire. I'm better than most people. I've got all this money here doing this, and it's like, yeah, you're spoiled. You know, you're not better than anyone here doing it. You didn't work any harder than the secretary. You didn't have stock options or do anything different or any more brilliant. You know, you didn't invent the computer, you know, whatever. But he taking them directly from being a slave and throwing them in the middle of it, would they have learned to trust God? Here they have houses. Would they have learned to depend on God? You know, the whole manna thing to consider, why did God do it that way? Where daily they went out, daily they had to trust. When I get up in the morning, I don't have food for today. Because if I kept it from the night before, it rotted. Maggots got in it, started stinking, rotting. So, can't do that. So every day I have to get up and depend that God will provide for me. For 40 years they did that. You know? Why? It's because God wanted to reprogram that every day we get up dependent on Him. So that when we have, you know, we're hard in this country. I mean, what do? You know, I spend about 5 seconds going, I'm really cold. Right? You know? I don't have any food. I'm going to have to go to the store? Dang. You know? I mean, we don't spend time going, God, help me, in our culture, very often. You know? Here we are living in this. I mean, you could tell me stories where you come from where this winter would have produced extreme hardship on most people, right? I mean, they would have struggled to have enough heat to keep warm. They've been huddling around their little fire. Hopefully they have enough wood to keep them going and enough food to keep them going. And they're just crying out, God, help us. God, help us get through this winter. Not in our society. We don't easily know that. But it's just as essential that we learn to be dependent on God every day. And to trust God every day. And not just when things are sideways. But God loves us enough to do it. When we can't see the hand of God, do we trust in the heart of God? you know. My son and I were talking about the snow last week. I think I said something about it last week, a week before doing it, and he's just, pretty soon you can just see him just kind of grumpy, you know. What's the matter with you? Amazing, imagine that, but he's grumpy. What's the matter? I'm sick of the snow. Yeah, not him, Jeremy, the other son. You know, it's true, it's true. But you know, what's the? Oh, I'm sick of the snow. You're sick of the snow. You mean you're sick of God? What are you sick of? Because you know, the one thing about the snow that's really, really, really cool, we can't do anything about it. Okay, we have no control of how much falls, when it falls, where it falls. What color it is, no control. Okay? That isn't one of those few, comes directly from God. It's about as directly as it gets. Right? I mean, you can maybe try to logically explain why you're mad at your boss, right? Because he's kind of a egghead and doesn't make good decisions and didn't do this or that or something. But in lose sight of the God's in control of your boss, and God's still in control of your life, and God's still using your boss for this purpose, just like he's using the snow for our sanctification. Okay? God doesn't give us too much snow. God is God, right? And to be angry at the snow is borderline insanity. Right? It's an inanimate object. Now, am I mad about the fact that I'm old and it's hard to shovel snow and it makes me really tired? And well, yeah, that's something to be semi-uptight about, you know. Change that, you know. Angry at God? Angry at the snow? Again, when we don't see the hand of God, do we trust His heart? And God will always continually bring us through. If He loves us, God will continually allow circumstances in our life where we don't see His hand. Where it seems like, where is God? Where is He? What's happening? Why? So that we'll learn to trust His heart. So that our response will not be anger towards Him, grumbling towards Him, complaining towards Him. The grumbling, that's something that we need to rid ourselves of. Teach our children not to do, right? We allow our children to grumble, okay? We don't let our children very easily go, get back in our face, you know. I mean, when a child goes, no, I'm not going to do this, we might go, I should probably do something about this, you know. But when a child goes, okay, you know, fine. If you want to act, fine. Are you kidding me? Teaching a child that it's okay to grumble is a bad thing. Because you know what they're going to do? Grumble when they get old. Okay? You know what they're going to spend their life doing? Grumbling. Murmuring, under their breath being discontent, dissatisfied, untrusting. Instead producing the response of, doesn't look like I want it to, isn't what I wanted, isn't the way I see it should be, but I'm going to trust you. You know, that is what we're trying to produce in our children, just like that's what God is producing. And He could have done it a lot different way. He didn't always have to let it go right up to the point where I'm really, really hungry, I have no water, we're going to die here in a day or two. In watching very intently, going, okay, how are you going to respond? Wrong? Okay, then we're going to go here again. So, but here's some food. I'm going to take care of you. So you trust that and look back on that. And okay, now we're going to go again. I'm going to let you get really hungry again. You're going to go, God, where are you? Okay, here's water. I'm going to give you some water. Here's some Amalekite guys coming and trying to kill you, warring against you. Nope, you're not tougher than them. What's it depend on? Me? God? Moses raising his hands, holding his hands up in prayer. Holding his hands up in prayer. Yeah, I know we have to talk about this, huh? So, but it was, by most implication, he was praying. When hands went down, they got their fannies kicked. When hands went up, what? You got to be dependent on me. It's not you that's going to be tougher than them. You need to learn that it is by me and my strength that you win. And God wanting to teach this, just like a child, just like that red-headed stepchild that we adopt, that trusts no one, that trusts nothing, that trusts only himself. And you want to walk him through learning to trust, learning to trust, learning to trust. I mean, there comes a point where bad behavior becomes no longer acceptable. You're not okay to respond the way you do. You're not right to throw a fit and keep doing. God's best way with his people. Okay? he you know, there's a bunch of things in there where he flat killed him for it. But let me read one little section here, and then we'll go eat pizza with the kids. In Hebrews chapter 12, okay? Hebrews chapter 12. It's talking about in this world where there is still, why did God leave us in a world where there's still sin and there's still temptation? And who is the prince of the power of this world? Satan, the enemy of God, that will always press and always test and always push us away from God, always seek to push us away from God. And God allows us to remain in it. Why does he allow us to remain in it? Same reason that we allow our kids to go through in a controlled environment, watching very closely the intent of their heart, trying to mold and shape them. Hard things, right? Might start easy, take the trash out, you know, but now there's 3 foot of snow, take the trash out, you know, and how does this go? And keep teaching the child in this because we love him. In verse, let me just read the first couple verses, actually, the first 13 verses. Therefore, since we have such a great cloud of witnesses, chapter 11 of Hebrews is a wondrous one. It's the great men of faith. And what are the men of faith? They're people who did not see the hand of God, but responded by it correctly, responded to the heart of God that they knew. Okay? They're people that were put in a position where they could not see any way out, where it didn't look, you know, all of a sudden God told Abraham to go kill his son and sacrifice him, burn him on an altar. I mean, if that doesn't traumatize you, you need to think about it. As a father. I mean, he was going to get it done. Trusting. And why did God push him like that? Why would God do that? We are, you know, mothers don't understand it. Okay? This is one of the reasons why a balanced mom-dad relationship is really important. Moms say, well, why would you do that to your child? Why would you put him in that position to struggle? And, you know, here he is. He led all the way till he raised a knife. Tied his son up on a pile of sticks. On doing that. Why did God do that? Because he loved him. Because he cared about him. Because he wanted him to learn that he could absolutely trust her to the end. I don't think I would have, at this point in my life, I don't know, I can't imagine. I can't imagine that I'd have gone that far. You know, I wouldn't have been in chapter 11 probably. Okay? So, but chapter 12, that since we have such a great cloud of witnesses surrounding us, this is speaking to us, as people, normal people, let us lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, not on circumstances, on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame. He has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you may not grow weary and lose heart. Fix our eyes on Jesus and what he did and what he went through and what his life looked like, and we will realize how pathetic we are. You have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin. Okay? And you have forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. This is a very important verse as fathers, as mothers. This is a primary verse on parenting. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. Faint when you are reproved by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines. And he scourges every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? But if you are without discipline, of which we have all become partakers, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Meaning that you are not a father. Acting as a father and mother in concert towards your children. But if you are without discipline, no. Furthermore, we had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time as seemed best for them, but he disciplines us for our good, that we may share in his holiness. Prepare us for the kingdom, set apart as a people. All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet to those who have been trained by it, afterwards it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. Therefore, strengthens the hands that are weak and the knees that are feeble, and make straight paths for your feet, so that the limb which is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather healed. That is speaking about a whooping. Okay? And he says, God says that if he loves us, he's gonna scourge us. Because he loves us and cares about us that much. The things in life, you know, I don't know if any of us will ever feel directly the hand of God on our bare butt. But there are many things in life that will certainly seem like that, if we interpret it correctly. That this is the loving discipline of a father, because he does care, because he does want me to be holy. And this didn't happen. These people were not holy, and God brought them out, so he was disciplining them, teaching them. Understand, no amount of discipline will make up for a lack of training. Very important concept in teaching your children. The essential thing, we need to essentially train our children and discipline them accordingly. Okay? The two need to go hand in hand and train. But God did that. God walking through the wilderness, what did that look like? He was training them, right? He was training them to come up again. I mean, this is a short time. Here they are 6 weeks in, and they're already completely sideways several times, right? Come to the Red Sea. God, you forgetting us. Forget us. Why did you leave us here? I'm going out. Through a big fit, right? It wasn't just murmuring. They were flat screaming it. Okay? God said, okay, I'm going to show you. Boom. Come up. We don't have anything. We're going to die. Animals are going to die. Everything's going to die here. Boom. We're going to, I mean, this is a continuing process where God scourged them in the pot. You know, it isn't fun to, I mean, in visualizing over the last month, being up against the Red Sea and the Egyptians coming at you. I mean, just terrifying, you know, because they hadn't seen the Charlton Heston movie yet, you know. So they didn't know the sea was going to open up, man. They thought they were going to be, you had two choices, die drowning or die by the sword and be beaten and, you know, so. I'll quit because, Richard, you went and got pizza. And I said noon, I didn't mean to lie. So let's go. You know, can't shut up. God, I thank you that you're a dad that loves us. I ask that you would, one of the critical things that we need is a reorientation on what a dad's supposed to look like and how he's supposed to respond to our children, because all of us have been tainted in that view. We need to realize that you don't honor and don't think it's right for us to be self-sufficient. That goes completely and entirely against what the biblical concept is. We're not called to be self-sufficient. We're not called to be self-reliant. We're called to be dependent on you. That doesn't mean pathetic, whining, lazy people. That means people of action that trust you. God, I ask that you would reorient our thinking to honor that, to respect that, to see that as your way, and to see that our way is a mess, as little survivors that first and foremost are mad because we're not in control and don't have things in order. We're not able to manipulate things in a certain direction. I thank you that you're a God that is willing. You say that if we are not disciplined in that way, if we do not come up against things which are completely out of our control, we have no hope but to cry out to you, then we're illegitimate children. And that should scare us bad. The enemy will always come in and interpose and pretend to be you and say, I'll take care of you. And works that out in most people's lives. as they give allegiance to somebody other than you. So God, I ask that you would free us from the false idolatry of understanding you. God, I ask that you would, as Levi did, but I joined these men and these women, that we would pray, that cry out to you that the time spent, the women, the rest of this day would be productive for your kingdom. I ask that you would soften hearts, protect them in their environment they're in, cause them to move to another level of intimacy and trust with each other and with you. God, don't let them walk away from their untransformed. Please redeem the few hours they have left, that it would be profitable for your kingdom. Cause us to love these little kids. And continue to be good dads. In the name of Jesus, amen.